Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to The Legal Show. My name is Bennett Pomerantz, and my partner in crime, the woman that is the legal eagle of this whole show, and I respect immensely, the lovely and talented Miss Sarah. Yeah, if I can say it three times, you can slap me later. Sarah Steele. If I can say it, I'll be good. Hi.
Good evening, Bennett. How are you?
I'm okay.
Well, good.
I am okay. It's just, excuse me for bastardizing your name.
That's quite all right. I know it's not quite as complicated as Avraham used to be, but you know what? Sometimes you just got to let your tongue trip it out and figure it out.
Well, I remember I have this album of bloopers, and this gentleman was president. States, and they said, ladies and gentlemen, Herbert Hoover. It's bad, not that bad. As I said, this is The Legal Show. Sarah is the attorney and the brains about the legalists of this. I only love the law. When I was a young journalist, I would go and sit at the bar and listen to all these attorneys. I'm trying to find a better word for it. I'd say bitch and moan, but you can say anything you I lost that case. I had Judge XYZ. Yeah, okay. And I used to sit there and listen. And I learned more law just sitting at the bar and listening to them and having a Perrier than you would go into law school.
Now, are you talking about the bar like a literal bar where one would consume alcohol, Bennett?
Yeah, like right across the street from the courthouse.
Oh, so the bar across from the bar. Gotcha, okay.
Yeah, the bar across from the bar.
I gotcha.
Where a lot of the lawyers would hang out.
Well, that's definitely one way to get a legal education of some sort or another.
Well, I learned a lot from it, but I also learned more from you daily than anything else.
Well, God bless you, Bennett. Again, the check is in the mail.
Oh, just making sure. Yeah, okay. Small bills.
Okay.
Would you like to give your lovely disclaimer and explain tonight's case to these wonderful people?
Absolutely. It would be my pleasure. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Sarah Avraham Steele. I am an attorney licensed to practice in the state of Georgia. And as I've said many times before, we want you, Ben and I both want you to know that the act of sending a message to either one of us or listening to this show or any way communicating with us does not create an attorney-client relationship. There's no level of confidentiality here. There's no secrets, no privilege, no anything like that that applies. And listeners of The Legal Show should not act nor refrain from acting based upon any information that they receive here or any information contained in any message from either one of us or by participating with us on the internet in regards to the show, listening to the show, anything like that. In fact, my dear listeners, you should first seek competent professional counsel in your own jurisdiction regarding the specific facts and circumstances at issue in your case, should you ever have one. So no assembly required, batteries not included. It's we're just here to talk. We're not here to do business tonight. We've done enough of that today.
So let's explain this case of this evening, which I think is interesting.
Okay. Well, I want to sort of give a 50,000-foot view and then come down a little closer to the ground. And what we were here to talk about tonight is intellectual property law, and specifically patents, and what can happen if you do not either act or pay whenever, act on a patent or pay on a patent if you happen to hold one. I did a lot of research because the original article that I based the show on was written back in 2017, whenever right before you and I took the hiatus. And so, you know, of course, I want to make sure that I'm giving the most accurate and up-to-date information for everyone. But it seems that this story still stands, but there's a lot of debate back and forth in regards to whether or not how it's turned out would have turned out the way that it did if certain financial circumstances for the inventor would have been different. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to leave that up to your decision, although we can certainly debate the merits back and forth. And the person that we're talking about is Florida-based inventor Catherine Hettinger. Now, that name may not mean a lot to you unless you've, you know, are some sort of patent or invention fan, but she is a lady who has been creating different inventions for her whole life, from what I understand. But she is the inventor, allegedly, we'll get to that, allegedly, of the original fidget spinner. Now, you may recall the fidget spinners. They were huge as a craze back a couple of years ago, and they're still fairly popular. It's the little device that you hold between two fingers, and there's ball bearings beside the disc, and you can spin it and spin it and spin it and spin it and spin it. And there was a huge debate in regards to whether or not she was getting any money, and I'm going to go ahead and solve that mystery. She has not gotten a penny from this invention, and then there's some sort of debate back and forth in regards to whether or not she actually invented this or another version of it. Did Hasbro, who she was in talks with, end up purposefully not producing the toy until after her patent expired? And, you know, exactly, is there any sort of, you know, corporate espionage or at least corporate strategy at play here? Or was it just really bad luck on the part of this woman who's missed out on millions of dollars because of the popular toy that she may or may not have originally designed? So let's talk a little bit about that. She definitely is not, you know, making money off of it. That much I can settle that. But she, you know, if you search her name in fidget spinner, then, you know, it says, oh, you know, she's not making a penny off of her invention. Shame on the people who produced it, et cetera. But even she will tell you that she held the patent on what was called a finger spinner for 8 years, but then surrendered it in 2005 because she could not afford the $400 renewal fee. And so whenever you apply for a patent, you write the United States Patent Trademark Office, and you have an application, and with that application is usually a diagram of the thing that you're submitting the patent for. You submit the application fee, and if all things go well and if there isn't something else there substantially similar, then you can get a patent on whatever invention that you submit to them. But then after that, you do have to keep up the patent. And there are renewal fees, and I'd have to look up the specifics, but I believe you do have to pay yearly $400. And she wasn't able to do that. And she very simply put, and this is a direct quote, I just didn't have the money. It's very simple. And she said that the spinners that are now being produced is a palm-sized spinner that consists of a ball bearing which sits in a three-prong plastic device which can be flicked around. You know, it's helping children concentrate, those with ADHD. It's not just a toy. And while the manufacturers and retailers who are selling the modern-day versions of the toy, you know, are racking up these huge profits, Ms. Hettinger, who at the time of the article was written was 62, so I guess now she would be 64, you know, was downsizing from her tiny house into a condo. She was looking for a car that works, you know. She said it was very challenging being an inventor because, you know, only about 3% of inventions make any sort of money. And she's, in this quote from the article in The Guardian, she said, I've watched other inventors mortgage their houses and lose a lot. You take roommates, you can get help from friends and family, and it's hard. And she also has accepted that had she been able to afford to keep the patent, she would now likely be sitting on a rather sizable fortune. And she said, you know, but that's just the nature of inventing. And the article cites a list of notable inventors of other things, including Tom Berners-Lee, who claims to be the founder of the World Wide Web, who did eventually receive a little bit of money for a little bit compared to the invention that he invented. I think it was $1.2 million or something to that effect. I'd have to cross-reference that. That was an NBC News article. Yes, in Helsinki, he got $1.2 million cash prize. And so, again, I say that small. Of course, I would love $1.2 million. But considering what it is that he, you know, invented, that's a fairly small size of any sort of cash reward for what it is that he came up with in regards to the intellectual property of that. Hoverboard, you know, I mean, the hoverboards that people ride, the inventor was Shane Chen, and he didn't, either by accident or design, fail to cash in personally on the creation. And so Ms. Hettinger says that she's actually very encouraged by the spinner's sudden popularity, or the popularity of it. And she doesn't really seem to be bitter at all in regards to her loss of this, because it was just happens to be happenstance. Now, that was the article at The Guardian. Well, I dug a little further and found an article at Fordham Intellectual Property, Fordham, which is an intellectual property media and entertainment law journal. So this is actually the lawyers talking on this. And they said that in February of 1992, she filed a patent application for her spinning toy on May 28, 1993. And the patent was issued 4 years later on January 1st. And specifically, the patent application was directed to a toy that was to be spun on the finger for the amusement of children and adults. And the concept, for all intents and purposes, was the fidget spinner. But that was the concept. And the passion issue just about 20 years shy of it becoming a worldwide craze. And so as the fidget spinner craze swept the nation back in 2017, articles have been popping up all over the place, you know, basically saying that she was screwed out of her money. And this blog was really clear that, there had been several places like the New York Post, the Miami Herald, New York Times, even Wikipedia said that she was credited for being the fidget spinner inventor. But in fact, what she patented wouldn't have never covered today's fidget spinner. And this is a very important point in intellectual property law, especially whenever it comes to patents. You know, you never want to get too specific whenever you file a patent, because unless your particular invention requires that level of specificity, because you never know whenever someone might could come up with a substantially similar design that may not be covered by your patent. And it seems like that's what happened in her case. So this blog goes on to say that even if she had paid the required maintenance fee to prevent her patent from lapsing, it would have expired by the time that the fidget spinners gained popularity. You know, Hasbro had been talking to her about it in 2015. They abandoned the idea. And this is kind of where it comes into, was that intentional by Hasbro, because they just wanted to wait to see if she was going to let her patent expire, which, by the way, happens all the time. There are people that will go and they will search and look up all of these patents and see if they're about to expire. And if nobody re-ups them, then they can take the intellectual property themselves and then manufacture it themselves or have someone manufacture it for them. So that's another reason why she didn't make any money off of it, is because her patent was bound to expire. She didn't renew it, and maybe Hasbro took advantage of that, or another company, the one who originally produced the fidget spinner. Another aspect of intellectual property, back to what I was talking about in regards to specificity, is that a key element of her spinning toy was the, and here's a quote, essentially spherical dome for use as a balance, providing a mass to balance said finger spinner to aid a user in keeping a finger in a stable spinning spot under said thin-walled, essentially spherical dome. This spherical dome is the most preferred embodiment of the novel spinning toy. Let me break that down for you. So basically, her toy originally had you holding on not to a flat disc, but to a sphere or a ball or something rounded. And so the current and most popular model of the fidget spinner doesn't have that. It has a ball bearing center and the structure is entirely flat. So in essence, Bloomberg Technology, of course, another article, explained it best when they said the fidget spinner story had, quote, spun out of control, because essentially her invention that she patented was not substantially the same as the toy that is out there in the world now, the sphere versus the disc.
Question. Is it just with that?
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay, this is from George V. Hiya, George. Thank you for listening. So if we get a, we do a patent on a spinner like she did, but we change it just a hair difference, could that revert to the original owner, or does that revert to the one that showed the difference to it?
Well, that's kind of exactly what happened, and good call on sort of seeing that ahead of time. The spinner that we have now, you know, has where you hold on to the fingers, hold on with your fingers on a disc that's essentially flat, whereas her novel spinning toy had the essentially spherical dome for you to hold on to. I personally would have loved to, I didn't look up this patent before we came on the show today, but I would love to see if there was an illustration with a patent, which almost always happens, to see exactly what did hers look like versus the one that ended up being produced. Because if I had to guess, I'm kind of thinking at this point it might not have been the same thing.
Okay. This is from Angela J. Thank you for listening, Angela. So the if it's a different item, is that a different patent or is that a different... or is that the same patent?
No, if it's a different item, then they can absolutely get a second patent or a completely different patent. So if what you're asking is, does the one that Ms. Hettinger produced, is there a different patent out there for hers versus, or was there one for hers, versus the one that was actually produced with the flat disc? My guess is going to say, yeah, probably. At this point, because not only did hers expire, what they could have also done is made an application which included all or both of those designs. You know, if I had to guess, if there was a bigger toy manufacturer that came out and ended up producing this and patenting it, I'm guessing they probably would have included her design and sort of swept it into, you know, the whole patent application for the next one. Or maybe they just patented her original design away from her, and then, you know, included the design that we see today. Back to the Guardian story, this is a quote from the article. The toy manufacturing giant Hasbro, who has been testing the design, decided not to proceed to production, effectively leaving the project to wither and eventually die with the lapse of the patent in 2005. So,
okay, this is from Josh.
Yes, please.
Let me also say this. Josh, just who's listened to our show before, the old show, and said basically it's good to have us back on air. Thank you, Josh. I thank it as a mutual from Sarah and myself.
Yes, absolutely.
But he asked basically, could her daughter or any other family member pick up the right to the patent again?
Well, that's a good question. If it had not expired and it was still an active patent, that is a piece of property that is able to be willed, and that gets into estate law. If she had not let it lapse, but at this point, it's pretty much free game for anybody who wants to pick it up if it hasn't been picked up already. Like I said, I dare would guess, and like I said, unfortunately, I didn't have the time to research that before we got on the radio tonight, but if I dared to venture a guess, I'm kind of thinking that the person who did, who essentially ended up with the fidget spinner patent design that we see today, the one that was so popularized a couple of years ago, if I had to guess, they may have, you know, essentially stolen her idea, altered it a little bit, and gotten their own patent on it. And you never know. They may have produced an alternate design that they got an alternate patent on that included the spherical center that she originally intended. And if they have, whoever has that patent, they're the ones that are able to will that to their heirs in the future. That's why this area of law is called intellectual property. Because while it is an idea and it comes from your mind, you know, it is something that you can memorialize in paper. And again, this also covers copyrights and trademarks. And because it is actual property, it is, you know, able to be willed to heirs just like anything else. Or actually, even if you don't have a will, if you die intestate, which is the term for dying without a will, that is still a piece of property just as much as a house or you know, the mattress on your bed or the jewelry in your jewelry box, the car that sits in your driveway, that can be up for the subject of probate whenever you pass away, if you pass away without a will.
You are listed, by the way, on my will, so don't worry about it. You're getting my legal book.
Good to know. Good to know.
So now you know what you're getting when I go. I'm not planning on leaving for a long time.
I'll be sure to make room in my library for it.
Yeah, make room in. Yeah. So yeah, all the good. Yeah, but they're like 20 years old, so they still. The laws, not everyone, but some of the laws make sense. Let me ask one question. This is from Donna here. She said, can somebody assume her patent, her original patent idea? Does that make sense?
I think we might have already answered that already with the last question, whenever I said that they could take her idea and then patent it and make it their own. If that's what I if that's the understanding, if they could ask a little more specific question, then I'll be glad to answer. But yeah, I think we answered that in the last one.
I'm just reading them as we get them in the chat room. That's why
that's
I'm
quite
doing my job.
Absolutely.
And she also says, "Welcome back, Sarah. It's good to hear you again."
Thank you. It's good to be back. On the 2017 article, Ms. Hettinger apparently, she had a Kickstarter and she had that was going on at the time. And by the way, when you follow the link, there's no further information there, but she had plans to manufacture and sell her original spinner design if she had raised enough funds. So apparently she was going to try to get a second bite at the apple. And like I said, whenever I followed the link, there was absolutely nothing there. So yeah, that was the only other update that I could find.
Okay, let me ask.
Bennett, don't you have homework to do? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I want to make sure I keep you on track too.
You can always keep me on track. I've got Tuesday shows too, but we'll get to that later. But can a daughter or a son or whatever, because she did at that time had a 7-year-old daughter, can the daughter...
Oh, whenever she first admitted it, yeah, but her daughter's now 30 years old, so yeah.
But it could be assumed if it's still being paid, it was still being paid for. It's not, I know it's not, but if it was still being paid for, could the daughter assume it?
Well, again, that's the thing about intellectual property is that it can be willed. It absolutely can be willed.
Okay. Hey,
because of the property
nature
of the intellectual property.
I'm answering all the questions from the chat room, so we're having a good time.
Sure, absolutely. It's my pleasure.
And everybody is saying, oh, welcome back, Sarah. So if I repeat it 4 times, excuse me, I'm just reading it as it comes. See, she's the good-looking one. I'm just the ugly puss that plays MC and reads the questions.
Well, and let me add a little more information. In accordance with the U.S. law, to enjoy a 20-year term for a patent, maintenance and renewal fees should be paid at year 3.5, 7.5, and 11.5. So after the 3.5 year, 4 years thereafter, and 4 years thereafter, after the grant of the patent. So
now we're saying intellectual property. What is inclusive in intellectual property? Thank you. By the way, thank you, David, for your question.
Hi, David. As I mentioned before, intellectual property is inclusive of copyrights, and patents and trademarks. Patents is where you actually own intellectual property rights on a physical object, and a copyright is something that you own the intellectual property rights for things like music, you know, something that you is not necessarily a tangible widget, a widget as they call it in law school, that you can that something that can be felt with your senses but not necessarily felt with your hands. So a television concept, a story concept, something that you write down in a book, an idea, things of that nature, not necessarily a tangible object. And of course, trademarks is what enables you to keep the intellectual property rights to your brand. And something like, you know, service marks is something like you see the golden arches, you know, the yellow M, and you know exactly that that's the brand of McDonald's. So those are the three intellectual property categories.
And David says thank you, by the way. So you're very much welcome. Now, we have about a little bit of homework for the next couple of weeks because Sarah and I are going to be gone in mid-April for a week.
We are.
We're celebrating Passover. Yes, I'm Jewish. Yes, yeah. They don't believe I'm Jewish. Yeah, okay. They believe you're Jewish, but not me. So, I don't know. I'm just telling the truth, okay? But, yes, I'm Jewish, and yes, I'll be at both Seders. I'll be the one right next to the horseradish. All kidding aside.
That just keeps you spicy, baby. That just keeps you spicy.
I love it spicy. Keep it spicy with me. We will be off that week, and of course, we'll have the show, you know, before and after, you know, coming on. But we won't. Neither Sarah nor I will be at the helm on that Thursday, so you guys can miss it and see us the week after, and we will be doing shows. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. And next week our show. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That was the next question. Sarah, what is our next week's show?
So I put on my psychic hat before I get on the radio tonight. We call it, the article is called Your DNA or Your Life. And this is something that is very interesting to me because for those of you who don't know, before I was an attorney, my undergrad was in microbiology. And so, you know, I'd studied DNA and I studied all sorts of little tiny things that exist in this world. And the show is going to be about, you know, companies like 23andMe and Ancestry, now that they're getting into the genetic testing, that will gladly take your genetic material and tell you, you know, what your genealogical heritage is from. And it sounds like a great deal of fun, but then the question comes, can this information be subpoenaed by governmental or other agencies? And if so, under what circumstances? And how can you protect yourself? And so this is something that I've been talking to people about for years, and I'm very excited about going ahead and being able to do this show because it's going to be good stuff. It's going to be good stuff. I'm looking forward to it.
Julia just said, good, are you going to talk about how they can steal your DNA?
I wouldn't say steal. It's under court order, but yes, yeah, something to that effect, Julia. I look forward to telling you exactly how it is that they can get it, and I'll go ahead and give you a little bit of a tidbit. The answer is yes, they can, under certain circumstances, and we'll talk about that next week.
We will. We have about a minute left. As always, dear Sarah, it is my pleasure always to do this.
It's my pleasure as well, darling. I'd like to go over, while we were sitting here doing homework, I looked up a neat little chart that I like to refer to whenever it comes to intellectual property. There are patents, like I said, trademarks, copyrights, and trade secrets is another form of intellectual property. I wanted to make sure I covered that. Trade secrets protects information, and the infringement that can incur is misappropriation. So if you have a trade secret in a business and you steal that, that's the infringement. And the term of protection is usually potentially indefinite, and it's limited by the secrecy, basically. And the only thing they can protect you there is a non-disclosure agreement. But there's actually an agency where you can register things like patents, copyrights, and trademarks. With copyrights, It protects works of authorship, music, books, etc., and it protects you from the copying of that and using it and making money of your own. And the term for that is life plus 70 years. The trademarks, again, protects brands, and they're used in commerce, and they are potentially infinite. And depends on how you...
Bring you all night. We got to go back to an hour one of these days. But it is time we need to say goodnight for the evening. I will talk to you next week. Be healthy.
Absolutely. Everyone have a good evening.
Take care. Good night.
Good night.